Can you hear me, Mr. Mobat? Can you hear me now?
Now you can hear me. Okay.
AFI. Backstage Stories.
Man, you got some lovely hands here. Do you moisturize?
I'm sorry?
I tried all sorts of brand of lotion. I even went fragrant free for a whole year. Now, my sister, she uses aloe vera with a little sunscreen in it. Yeah. And ideally speaking, we all should wear gloves to go to bed. But I found out that that would be a little interference in my social agenda, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Plus, I get a reaction from the camphor. So I really don't get into the traditional remedies, you know.
I see. Yeah.
Hey, John, what are you doing to your fingers there? Is this some lotion?
I'm adding very, very thick lotion to my fingers because this excessive hand washing is basically cracking my skin in the night, and I wake up with bloody knuckles.
Same here.
I got bloody knuckles, mate. I can't keep this fucking dry weather off my fingers. Every fucking time I gotta wash my hands for 2 minutes.
Those liberals wanna wash me hands. It's
fucking awful, mate. Can't keep the fucking dry skin off my hands.
Yeah, that's a great way to start the episode. Just do Jordan whale sounds, or whatever that was.
It's me, Jordan fucking Prince, mate. I'm up here with Mobet on the line. We're on the phone. He's over there in the Oberstdorf from here in Munich, and I'm adding some lotion to my hands, mate.
Do you want to stick to that kind of accent? Can you call this accent or just bullshit for the rest of the episode?
But it's not an accent, bruh. Mate, it's not an accent, mate. It's a way of life. You start talking like that, you can't change it willy-nilly.
I think it's blending into Jimmy. I think we should stop before anyone gets offended.
I have never seen anyone putting his wedding ring on in such a smooth way.
You sadly, like that one out. Now my hand's got lotion over it, so it just slides down.
I wish we had a video podcast.
That's the next step for sure. If Corona continues, we should just introduce a YouTube edition to it.
But I just did a screenshot of you putting it on, so we can add that on social media.
Nice. You can tell people it's my dick.
With some Photoshop, yes. We surely can.
With some Photoshop. Make it look true to size. Yeah, dude. So here we are on the line. Artsy fartsy through the phone. And
it's weird.
It's fucking crazy. It's a really weird time, man. I feel like whenever I leave the house, I feel like every person that I see on the street, because also, I don't know how it is on your side, but in Munich, people don't give a fuck, man. They're everywhere, especially old people. I always feel like everyone I see is infected, and I'm scared, like, of people. It's really weird.
Funny that you also say that, because I also do other podcasts here, and I talked about exactly this topic with 3 different people already. And everyone has the same impression. It's the same here. They're, of course,
really?
Oberstdorf, smaller town, smaller village. There are not that many people anyway, especially since tourism has obviously also been shut down. But the people you meet in supermarkets and stuff are also old people. It seems like the people who are staying home are younger people and families, but the elderly just give a fuck. And I already heard some kind of statements from elder people like, yeah, we survived World War II. What should this coronavirus do to us? And it's super ignorant because it's not only about yourself.
It's so dumb.
Maybe, I don't know, if you're 80 years old and give a fuck if you die tomorrow or in 2 years, okay, your thing, but you can still carry the virus and infect others.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, like, they don't give a shit. I mean, the thing is, I'm scared to give them the illness because I don't want them to get sick and die. But if they don't give a shit, they could get it and give it to, like, their healthcare worker or, like, their, you know, their day nurse or whatever, their brother-in-law. And then he could get it and he could die. Or it's just, like, stay the fuck home, people. Stay home.
I've been to the supermarket and it's been like an arcade game trying to avoid any type of content.
Yeah. That's so crazy, man. we're just trying to fill up the time here, basically. Like, besides, you know, playing a lot of extra music here, we downloaded the Apple Arcade for the projector. Ooh.
That's
been really cool. It's really cool. It takes a while to set up. I think it's better with some controllers. I think I'm going to order some controllers, but you can use the little Apple remote and you can use your phone. And I think with two or three people, some of the games are going to be really fun. I've only done a couple of them with Ify, and she's not a gamer. She's really real bad. She's real bad at it.
Dude, I downloaded Disney Plus as soon as it was released in Europe 2 days ago.
Oh, 2 days ago already. Well, that's perfect timing.
Yeah. And wow. I did not start watching The Mandalorian yet. Mm-hmm. I really want to, but there are only two episodes out, and I don't like to watch shows where they release one episode after another, because then you watch the first two, and if it's good, you're like, oh, fuck, I want to see more, and then you wait, watch something else.
Right.
And if it's not like something like Game of Thrones, where you really stick to it, even if there are 1 or 2 weeks between the episodes.
Yeah.
If it's not that great, you just, I don't know, you'll stop watching it and watch something else. And so I'll wait until there are more episodes, and episodes with Baby Yoda, finally.
Yeah, then you can, binge it.
They have such a huge program. You start to realize, what the fuck is going with Disney? What they
own everything, man.
They got all seasons of The Simpsons, obviously all the old Disney cartoons. I started watching DuckTales yesterday.
Oh, nice. I haven't seen that in forever.
I'm super into it now. And they got everything, all the Marvel stuff, anything.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably go through the entire, you could probably watch Marvel movies from morning to night throughout this entire Corona crisis and still not finish them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 11 years of movies. It's crazy.
Yeah. And for now, and I'm on that free trial week now. It seems like it has a better offer than Netflix for me now, but that's also because after a while, you've seen most of the stuff you want to see on Netflix.
Yeah, that's true. You get burned out. We got really lucky the other day because we discovered that Netflix just released this limited series called The Tiger King. Have you seen it yet?
No. Haven't heard anything about it at all.
I can't recommend anything more than this show. I don't want to give too much away, but it's a documentary series. It's 7 episodes, and it's the most like intoxicating, like captivating humans I've ever seen. They're insane. They're like the worst part of America, but also the best entertainment you've ever seen. It's wild, man. Like, please watch this show so I can talk about it with you.
Okay. Like stories like you told us the last two episodes in this podcast.
Yeah, kind of. But imagine if I was like really proud of it and was kind of oblivious and was absolutely like a methed out country boy. Jesus Christ.
Shit, man.
But yeah, man. So let's talk about, you know, something we do on AFI Backstage is talking about a theme and the differences between how you saw them as a kid in Germany and how I saw them as a kid in the States. And I think something that really binds us is music. So I'm really curious, you know, what was like the first band you remember getting into?
I had that band for quite a while. We called ourselves Sam Chesson. We just switched the first two letters of the words jam session, and it was Sam Chesson.
Wait, this was the first band you were in?
This was the first band I was in, as far as I remember.
Ah.
There were some kind of school projects before, but this was the first actual band I was in. I was like 13, 14 when we started this thing.
Sam Chesson. Jesson.
We were obviously like super bad. I got my first electric guitar for, I don't know, $100 or something. But it was quite a good deal for that money. And a friend of my dad, you know him, Florian Jäger?
Yeah, the guitar dude.
And he found some crazy Korean company who built super cheap copies of Fender guitars, but in a quite good quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought one of those, and we just started playing. And it was obviously like super bad shit, three chords,
What was the style? Like, was it more punky or metal or rock?
No, not at all. It was more like, I don't know, like a 60s vibe. That's also like a British 60s vibe. That's also why after a while we started to define ourselves as mods. You know, the whole mod movement was the counterpart to the rockers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen Quadrophenia, the movie?
No, not yet.
It's so good.
Quadrophenia, I'm gonna write that down.
Because in Brighton, where we've been at the seaside, at the huge pier, there's been in 67 or something, there's been a huge fight between mods on their Vespas and their suits and rockers in their leather jackets and motorbikes. And they've been meeting there, and it was like a humongous fight through the whole city.
I would love to see that.
And it was kind of, I don't know, maybe the biggest inspiration were bands like The Who, obviously The Beatles and stuff. I don't know how we got there. It was like experimental blues rock, but you could point out the experimental in sense of we were not knowing what we were doing, and just started to jam out. And everyone has learned an instrument before, but in a classical way. Mm-hmm. Then I started to get in some blues stuff.
Yeah.
And so we started. Three chords, guitar solos on the basic pentatonics. That's it.
Nice, man. Yeah, I feel like a lot of Germans who I've spoken to about getting into music, that either they start with a classical background, or they, if they're more into rock, that they usually lean towards blues. I think that's pretty interesting. Like a lot of musicians that I've talked to, young or old, are just really into blues. And I remember the first bands I was really interested in probably had roots in blues. Like my dad used to show me like Led Zeppelin, for example. And they're famous for having ripped off like a lot of, you know, like, I don't know, Muddy Waters or Lead Belly riffs and stuff. And it works, but it was like this, it was twisted into kind of this heavier metal sound.
Yeah.
But I never really started off like, I'm going to listen to blues, you know? And I like a lot of Germans do. I think that's pretty interesting. I wonder why that is.
I wanted to, but for me it was like, I don't know, as a pretty young kid, so at the age of 6 or something, I got into the Beatles because my mom had this huge Beatles poster in my parents' bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
This super crazy acid inspired Beatles poster. It was super impressive for me as a little child.
What was inspired? What was it?
Like acid inspired.
Oh.
I gotta Google it and send you a photo of it. It's super crazy. And
yeah, I wanna see that.
Super many different colors and the faces are looking surreal and stuff. And as a kid it was pretty impressive because it was looking super weird. And then my mom gave me a cassette MC or a CD, I can't remember. And I started listening to the Beatles and found them pretty cool. And then my dad, I don't know, I guess it was like on car rides with my dad where he had some Muddy Waters CDs on. And I was only 7 or 8 years old at that time. Mm-hmm. And I found it super cool.
Absolutely. Super influential, like especially at that age. Anything you hear, especially from your dad, if you have a good relationship with him, it changes your whole life. You know, my dad showed me like Queen and what else was he really into? Like, I remember Queen and Zeppelin being like the main forefront of what he was really into. And then like Crosby, Stills and Nash.
Ooh.
But he wasn't really into Bob Dylan. I think he was more into people who could really sing very powerfully or sing with good harmonies. And Dylan, for him, just like the tone of his voice or like the fact that it was kind of all over the place just didn't, you know, he wasn't like a lyric man. He was more of like a melody man. Yeah. And then it took me till I was like well into my teenage years to get into Dylan. Then I was like, everything I've learned before now is useless. You know, it's like changed everything for me when I got into Dylan.
Yeah. You could break it down. What my dad showed me at a child's age was like, I break it down to three artists. I remember there could be more, but it was like AC/DC, Bob Dylan,
this
old blue stuff, like from Robert Johnson to B.B. King. And anything.
Oh, nice.
And I don't know. As a kid, I also really liked AC/DC, and I imagined the singer also to be a very angry kid because of his voice.
Is it the original, like Bon Scott?
He should
I think
be
the original
anything.
Singer.
So, both of it. So Bon Scott.
Yeah, whatever his name was.
I can't remember it. Brian Johnson.
He's the second one. He's Brian Johnson.
The second one
is Back in Black, and then Bon Scott was the TNT.
Yeah, exactly. But they both sounded like angry kids like me when I was upset with my parents for anything and stuff. But when I was not in that mood, I didn't understand Bob Dylan as a child. It was lame for me.
I found him at the right time. I found him when I was like a moody teenager who like didn't know his place in the world. And I heard like The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. And I was like, this means everything to me.
This was the same situation when I found my love for Bob Dylan. And the third thing was this whole blues stuff. And that's what I somehow got stuck. Then I wanted to learn upright bass. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't possible because here on the countryside, the next teacher would have been like 30 kilometers away, and my parents couldn't drive me. And obviously, you need an upright bass, and as a kid, it's super hard to get an instrument. And so my dad was like giving me one of his old electric basses, and was like, "Yeah, here you go. Here you have a bass and a book. Just start." And so I just started practicing on my own with this bass and some licks I learned from this book.
Yeah.
And it was getting too boring. And then I wanted to play the guitar. And my mom was like, "Yeah, there's this one teacher. I already had had guitar classes with him. And she also sang with him. She was singing classical pieces and he was playing guitar anyway." And he was... I guess the most influential guy in my musical growing up.
Yeah.
But he was like a guy who was totally focused on classical music.
Right.
At first. And so I started there for 2 or 3 years only playing classical guitar. And then at some point, he found his love for blues, I guess, through me, because it was in him, but the last 20 years before, he was this super conservative guy in the sense of music, only focusing on classical and contemporary music. He's also a composer for contemporary music, very, very strange fields. And then we both discovered, okay, blues is fun to play. And we started to play basic blues licks and old songs. And that's the point where I got into this band.
Crazy, man. Yeah, for me, for blues, like, as an art form, it was something, like, as a technique, it was something that I was learning through exploring my interest in rock music. So I was learning some rock riffs and going back and kind of deconstructing them and realizing that this had a lot of basis or a lot of foundation in blues, or it was, like, rooted from blues. And so for me, that was always something I was learning on the back end.
Yeah.
But in general, like, you know, major blues artists who have had such a big influence on, I don't know, you know, thousands of artists, that those artists, you know, like Muddy Waters or Lead Belly or whatever, were people that I had to go back consciously and research, like, as an active act of wanting to learn about them. It wasn't something that came naturally. You know, it was like, I want to know more about who are these blues guys who inspired the people that, you know, that inspired the people that inspired me. So it was something that I had to consciously go back and learn about, but blues was never like my initial go-to. It's funny, like, I guess it was all based around my dad when I was young. It was, you know, around these strong singers and strong harmonies and like strong songwriting. And, you know, after I got into Queen, I mean, I still find myself humming like Good Old Fashioned Loverboy. That's just such a cool song. It's so cool. It has all this attitude. It's like sassy, but it's like it's very masculine and feminine at the same time, which is something that Queen did perfectly, I think. And, you know, I don't know. I was into like Black Sabbath. Then I got into Pink Floyd. And then like my dad was kind of my first musical inspiration. Everything he would show me, I would more or less get into pretty quickly. But then around the time I was a teenager, the next big person of influence was this guy, Todd Gurley, who owned this small record store in my hometown. It was called Top Shelf Records. And I still have some of the t-shirts that we wore around then. It's like 12 years ago. But he had this record store in the town. And I remember seeing like a David Bowie vinyl in the window. And I was like, what is this shop? This looks cool. And man, I just started going there, no joke, like 5 or 6 days a week, sometimes just to buy stuff or just to talk to Todd. And we became like best friends. We still talk. We were talking this week. And he became a big influence on my taste in film and in music. And he was the guy who was like, you know, he showed me, you know, LCD Sound System and MGMT and Vampire Weekend and, you know, Arcade Fire, Elliott Smith, The Flaming Lips. He got me into some old classics. Like, I didn't know anything about Sonic Youth. I didn't know much about Arctic Monkeys. He just really opened up this window, this floodgate of great music. And Bob Dylan was like the big signature artist that once it came to me, I started comparing everything I was into off of Dylan. I was like, this doesn't even remotely compare to what this guy's doing. Like, I'm throwing that out, you know? It was wild, man.
But what I wondered, because that was a big topic for me in my youth, was the conflict between what I was into through the music I was playing and mm-hmm. the whole thing I got to through my family and my own experiences versus the music my friends were listening to, which I also got into, but it was a complete separate thing. So on my own, I was into obviously blues rock, psychedelic stuff. And then at some point I got into this whole indie thing. Like Arctic Monkeys were a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
And punk rock. And my friends around me listened to mainly hip hop and reggae. And I also found some love for that, but it was always kind of a thing. I really liked the music when I was with them and I could recognize it, but I wouldn't play it on my own.
Right.
Did you have something similar, or was it, were you in a bubble where it was kind of the same? So you had a group of friends and you were all into this kind of music.
Well, actually, it was kind of the opposite. I mean, I had really good friends in that town. I'd say like maybe 3 or 4 really good friends. And we had all like the exact same taste. We were all listening to the stuff that Todd was giving us. But the bad part was like just outside of that small circle, it was still a very small, very Southern, very Christian, very conservative town in Mississippi. So, you know, all the music around that was a toxic cocktail of, you know, top 40 pop that was just not my thing at the time at all. I've gone back to appreciate artists like Destiny's Child or Mary J. Blige or, you know, Genuine or whatever from the time. But it was, you know, top 40 pop or, you know, I think the biggest hip hop tracks at the time were like, to the window, to the wow, you know, and I just didn't vibe with like all these, you know, 12-year-old white kids being like, till the sweat drops down my balls, you know, or whatever. and then the third like most terrible combination was just country, man. Country music is still in that region like alive and popping, and it made my skin crawl, man. It made me want to like push. Like, maybe want to push people off of cliffs. Like, why are you listening to this? Why are you making me listen to this? I hated it. I could never, ever get into that. So, and we had our small group of, like, you know, highly influential songwriters that we were really into and, like, great up-and-coming indie bands that were changing the sound. And, like, I was really into The Killers and Arctic Monkeys and, like, British stuff. And, well, Killers are American, but still, like, really into this new wave indie sound. And, and then on the outside of those people, it was just all that garbage, like really bad top 40 country and pop. You know, we felt like we had our own cult kind of going on.
But regarding country, I got to admit, one guy I fell in love with at the same age I talked about the Beatles, like 5 or 6 years old, was definitely Johnny Cash.
Oh, he came later for me as well.
I got into Johnny Cash as a small kid, and it was like, it was something you could refer to, especially as a boy in Europe, having never seen, fun fact to the date, any part of the US, and but as a kid you're obviously, I don't know, you're imagining you're a cowboy or something and playing this whole stuff. You got all the stories around you. And then there's Johnny Cash, and this music seems to fit that. And
yeah,
he has a deep, very impressive voice. He does this.
God, his voice. Yeah, it's amazing.
It's pretty basic, pretty easy, but it has a strong vibe to it of, I don't know, sitting on a horse. You can hear the train like 5 miles away.
Oh, yeah, man. And he something. Was such a vibe maker.
And so I really got into Johnny Cash and am still today. Very, yeah, very absolutely. Impressive musician. Have you absolutely. Ever seen Walk the Line?
Yes, that was one of my favorite movies when I was a teenager.
Dude,
I loved that movie.
I was, in fall, I was in the cinema watching Joker, and it was like already an hour passed, and then I realized, oh, Joaquin Phoenix, he played Johnny Cash.
Oh, really?
And it wasn't a super weird moment, because there was this crazy tension in the theater, because this Joker is super intense movie, and
yeah,
I was thinking like,
intense.
Oh, that guy's Johnny Cash.
They're like, shut up, we know.
No, but that
yeah,
but
he's crazy,
I think,
man.
That's my only connection to country music, I guess.
Yeah, Johnny Cash is about as far as it goes for me. I mean, there's some old stuff, similar to the way I had to consciously go back to learn about certain blues artists. There's certain country artists that were really influential that I had to go back and learn to appreciate. Like, I don't know. I mean, Hank Williams, of course, a lot of Germans are really into Hank Williams when they think of country. And I mean, and that's, again, it's such a strong vibe. You can really hear, you know, this old style. You can see why it influences so many people. And like, I really can appreciate, you know, what he'd done. And like, Woody Guthrie was the biggest influence for Dylan, you know, and Dolly Parton like changed the whole fucking game. She's a legend. And, you know, I got a lot of respect for her. And honestly, for me, someone that my dad showed me when I was younger, who is technically country, but has bent the genre a lot of different ways, is Willie Nelson. I'm a big Willie Nelson fan, and I was talking about that with a couple of older cats a few months ago. Someone asked me what my favorite country artist was, and I was like, I think it's Willie Nelson. And they were like, man, that's so dumb. What a bad answer. And I was like, how can you judge an opinion on, like, what's so naive? Like, they don't know, you know what I mean? Like, Willie Nelson's worth paying attention to. I saw him live maybe 15 years ago, and he was already 1,000 years old. But
yeah, and have you seen his guitar with this? He plays a nylon string guitar with this.
Oh, yeah. It has a huge hole in it.
And you're like, dude, how can you still play that? And how does it still sound good? But one thing I always wanted to ask you, and I never got to it, since we're in that whole country vibe and stuff, you being from the south of the USA,
yeah.
What's your opinion on Lynyrd Skynyrd?
Lynyrd Skynyrd, oh, fuck, man. There's 4 or 5 songs I think slam. I love 4 or 5 songs very much. And then the rest of the catalog I never really got into.
But what I never really understood was, I don't know, this the political part about it, because I never got a feeling for, okay, what might be too much Southern patriotism and what's okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's something I never got into, because I love a few songs, and for me, Free Bird is still the greatest guitar solo of all time before Stairway to
Heaven.
That's
legendary. Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I really love a lot of songs of them, but I always thought, like, every time I see the flag, what's its name again?
The Confederate flag.
Yeah, the Confederate flag. I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, I think a lot of conservative Confederate people in the South of North America, you know, they look for symbols and idols and artists that they can kind of, you know, glob their ideology onto. And I think it's very easy for people who get famous from that region to be, you know, symbols of that sort of patronage or that kind of mentality. And, you know, I don't know much about Lynyrd Skynyrd's history or about their, you know, feelings towards anything political, but it could be that they, you know, strongly represented the South and wanted to consciously be this, you know, Confederate symbol. Maybe they were, I don't know. I think for me, even if they are that, I can disagree with it and still appreciate, you know, three or four good rock songs.
Of course.
But the South does that with everything, man. Like, there's just some, you know, highly uneducated, highly conservative, you know, highly terrified, gun-toting people from that area that just love the moment that there's an artist or a celebrity getting attention who might share similar feelings as them. They instantly attach onto it. It's kind of like Trump. It's like he said what he needed to say to get these people to be like, he speaks for us, you know, even though he doesn't, you know. Maybe Lynyrd Skynyrd was similar, I don't know. But yeah, the Confederate flag itself is definitely a really, really outdated symbol of racism. And if, you know, if they're an artist that chose to use that as their banner well into the modern age, then that's their mistake. I think that's really dumb. You know,
we both know a band that used the flag in a kind of adapted way to the day.
Yeah, that's the thing too. Is like a lot of Europeans don't, or maybe a lot of people outside of America don't get what that Confederate flag really stands for.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people just think it represents like country music and like, you know, cowboys and then like a tough Southern simple life and
this whole vibe,
you know, actually. Yeah, it's just like the country rock vibe. And like, I get what they're saying, but I think when they're told what it really stands for and they don't change it, it's kind of like, oh, what are you doing? Like, you know, I'm trying to help you out. But yeah, we shouldn't say it, but we both know a band like who did it. Not from America, but they use that symbol because of they think it means this like country rock vibe, you know. But they're not racist people. I know they're not, you know.
Yeah, but talking about racism that people don't get that they're racist. Like I read a super funny joke yesterday. One guy is telling his older sister, please stop calling the coronavirus China virus because it's super racist. And then she answers, yeah, but it's come from China, so it's the China virus. And he's like, yeah, you also came from our mom's vagina. We still call you Julia.
Oh, my God. I think that's like, that's this whole debate about what to call, coronavirus other than coronavirus. I think it's so... It's like the most useless thing to be like, why is this an issue in a moment of crisis?
Yeah.
Why? Why is there a photo of Trump, you know, marking out the word corona to put Chinese or Wuhan virus or I've heard everything, dude. It's like, why make a racist issue out of a completely non-racist issue?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, why is that even a thing? I don't get it at all, Confederate fuckers.
Have you seen the Cardi B memes?
Oh, hell yeah, dude. Cardi B memes are amazing.
With her standing...
Coronavirus!
It's so good. It's so good. But dude, I can't understand Cardi B's Instagram. When she starts videos and starts shouting at me, first of all, I have kind of a language problem because she's so fast and... has such crazy intonations that it's really hard to understand
really
for
strong,
me.
Yeah.
And the whole wife's like, okay, why is this woman shouting at me? But I really like
I'm sorry.
I really like the video where they cut her into the Trump speech where he turns around and then she's like, coronavirus. Oh, yeah.
And he's like, What? The security guard runs up to protect him. Yeah, that's a good one.
I've never listened to a Cardi B song, I guess.
I've definitely heard two or three. Yeah, they're pretty, I mean, when she does like a cameo spot on someone else's track, I think that's stronger. It's kind of like when Nicki Minaj first came on the scene, she was like a cameo spot on like Kanye tracks. And I was like, fuck, that's fire. But there's one great meme where, A guy has like a very sweaty, like paranoid face, like really scared face. And the top says, when someone on the train coughs, and then like in his head is a picture of Cardi B. And you just hear it. You know, you just look at it and you hear her saying that coronavirus.
But that's the I think the highest possible evolution of memes when a video gets so popular that you just can put this little image in there and you
just
hear
put
it.
That picture.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh God, it's perfect. She's nailed it. She just is a viral personality.
Can you imagine that a friend of mine and me, he's also working for radio, but for a public broadcaster, SWR. And we're thinking for maybe about a year now how we could bring memes to radio or podcasts to an auditive output.
Oh, I wonder how. I don't know. It seems like such a visual, medium. I wonder how. I mean, there must be a certain way. I know these old radio jockeys in the States had all these, like a huge soundboard of effects.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of podcasts I listen to still even use that same system. They have like a small, even like a keyboard of like 5 set drops that they'll use when they want to, you know, emphasize a punchline.
Yeah.
Could be something like that.
Sadly, we don't have one.
Dude, when we get, okay, when we bump up our catalog and we get like a soundboard and shit, I want to have coronavirus as the... Coronavirus! That's a drop.
We can do it in the studio, but sadly, we're not there.
yeah, we're doing a little DIY this time, but I think that's fine.
But we've gone a little far. I want to know more about you and your musical evolution, which is pretty interesting for me because we're also playing music together. In any kind of context for 5 years now. And
it's crazy.
I think I know many parts of your story, but not all of them. So what was your beginning, especially you playing the guitar, but you still, it's super weird for me you seeing or me seeing you play some guitar chords, which look so fucked up. What are you doing with your fingers? Where does that come from? Tell me this story.
Well, I mean, the first guitar that I ever got, my parents bought me this really cheap, I don't know, like a $50 electric guitar from Walmart and like a little 10 watt amp. And for like a few months, I gave it a little try, but I just didn't connect to it. And then I put it away. And then like the next year, my dad wanted to try and play guitar. So he bought like a really cheap acoustic and it came with a little chord book. And that's actually when I started because the chord book was there, but it didn't really say like index finger here, middle finger here, whatever. It just had like 3 dots or 4 dots wherever they're supposed to go. So when I saw like the A chord, I mean, any guitarist will know, you know, it can be very simple on your hand, but I switch one of the fingers. So it looks kind of like a clump, like a claw or something. And for my hand, it's very comfortable, and I can do little riffs in that position, but it's not the right way to do it. And I think the same for certain bar chords and the same for like E major. I switch a finger, and it looks funky to certain people. Like I'll play certain very simple songs, like James. My song James is a very simple song, but 2 of the chords have these switched fingers, and sometimes when people are playing along with me, they're squinting at my hand like, what chord is that? You know, and that's, for me, it's always funny because it's like, no, it's just a simple chord. But so I started playing around at the house a bit, and then I got back into my electric. So then I started like learning more back on my electric and getting into that. And I would say even from then, like as soon as I learned a few chords, I was already getting into songwriting. Mm-hmm. That was always my main goal. I always wanted to write songs. And there was always 2 parts of me, and that's still very alive today. It's the acoustic songwriter part of me and the electric, more rock-influenced part. So I always had 2 projects. Whenever I started having bands around like 16, maybe 16 or 17, I always had 2 different projects. I would do a concert in a cafe or in the record store alone with an acoustic guitar and do the soft serenading finger-picking stuff. And then the other part, I would come back with my band, a few friends from the area, and we would play electric. And I would dress differently. I would play heavier just to get both parts of the personality out. And that just stayed consistently through. Like, even when I moved to New Orleans, I always did my songwriter stuff separately from my band stuff. I had maybe three or four bands throughout college. One was like garage punk. One was like experimental folk, psychedelic sort of. And then I had my own, you know, folky singer-songwriters thing. And even now that I've been in Germany for a few years now, I have my project that occasionally bends more into like Americana rock or folk rock, but it's primarily singer-songwriter stuff. And now I've got this new electric guitar. I've got all these pedals. I've been preparing like for whenever we can finally tour again, you know, like bringing in a heavier element into the whole set, and trying to still continue to explore those two sides. So that's from day one up until present day, that's kind of always been the goal, to keep those two sides alive.
And that's super, for me, that is what makes your music super fun to listen to and super interesting. And that's also something, your first album, 12 Friends, 12 Songs for 12 Friends, for me was like all the way through, except of one or two little parts, intros, outros, whatever, or bridges.
Yeah.
Was this whole kind of cute songwriter thing. And as lucky as I am, I got to listen to many stuff of the new record already. And that's a point where I don't want to spoil anything, but that's the point where I hear the spectrum gets wider. I hear so many more niches and aspects of you as a musician. And that's super interesting. And one thing
that's cool, man.
That's one thing I wanted to add about your weird finger positioning. I saw a video, it's already 2 years ago or something, where they brought in, it was powered by some drum manufacturer, and they brought in famous drummers like the one of the Foo Fighters and some others, and they wanted them to recreate drum parts of Ringo Starr. And they came to a point where it wasn't possible for them to play the drum fills of Come Together. Those super weird fill-ins, and that comes through Ringo Starr being left-handed but playing a setup for a right-handed drummer.
Right.
And that's something, because you also mentioned, you can play little licks through it. For someone who has a classical education on guitar, it looks super weird, but it also brings many, many new kind of possibilities on playing on your instrument. Like the same thing.
Yeah, I think
with
the way... Yeah.
Yeah?
Go ahead.
No, it's the same thing.
No, it's just going to... Sorry. There's a bit of a delay, guys, so I'm not trying to talk over each other.
No, it's the same with, I don't know, with blues guitar players who started to use to roll the thumb around the fretboard and using the thumb on the
I love
on
that
the,
technique.
On the bass strings. What did you want to say?
I was going to say, like, I think this style of playing that I have has pros and cons to it. I mean, probably there's like a bit of a window of the structure and the theory that I'm missing, because I don't see my fingers in that way that most people do. But on the other side of things, like, I also can't read music. So I think playing by ear and playing with these weird positions kind of occasionally gives me my own little flavor, which maybe helps in a way to like be more unique or to be more in your own path, you know? So I'm just happy that I can play guitar. I just really enjoy doing that.
Yeah. We can see that a lot, especially in the, within isolation on your Instagram account.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's always fun. I think I might, if this Corona isolation continues, maybe I'll try and set up another online concert.
Or just release a second record, because you have so many ideas.
Yeah, or just do another fucking record, because who knows how much time we'll have.
That's something...
Hey, Mo, Go ahead.
That's also something I wanted to talk about. If the whole situation now changes anything about your plans when to release the new record.
So let me just say, I think unfortunately this has to be the last question, just because we went over a little bit of the time, which is okay, but I have to prepare lunch because we actually have to go to an appointment soon. So for this record, we are working with the label in Hamburg, and the booking agent is putting everything off. Basically, we just have to see how this whole crisis turns out, because we were planning to try and get a single out by the end of April already. But now all that has to be pushed back and reassessed. They were supposed to send me an email this week with a new proposed schedule, but they haven't yet. I think they're just, you know, everyone's just at home dealing with this the best they can. And I think maybe in another month or so, we'll have a new schedule. But, we were trying to get everything out for the summer, but it looks like it's going to be more of a later in the 2020s, situation.
I'm hyped anyway. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm stoked too. Gives me more time to perfect it or ruin it either way.
And I'm also looking forward to, I'm hoping that we can play at least a few shows this year.
I hope so too.
Man,
I hope so too.
It's been, I think that's a fair end. It's been a pleasure to talk to you again. Hope to hear you soon.
The pleasure's been mine, man. And for people who are listening, I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in during this time. Hope you and your family are all safe and healthy. And if you like the show, please make sure to go to the Apple Store or wherever you listen to your podcast and give us a good review or a rating, or just even tell a friend about us, because every little bit helps spreading the word around. So thanks a lot, Mo. I appreciate your time. And all right, guys, we'll see you in next week.
Artsy Fartsy Immigrants, ein Podcast von John Prinz und Moritz Batscheider, produziert für M94.5.